Up first, though, we welcome back to the show and here to the studio from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. What's the lovely and talented Sean Latch with us? Hello, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back in the studio.
Did you, you survived Halloween okay in your neighborhood?
So we don't get trick-or-treaters, and I don't understand why. We're on French Street, and every year I get a little bit of candy just in case, and I think the first couple of years we were there, we had, you know, maybe half dozen, and the last couple of years, nothing. Even, you know, I don't know. Just, I don't know if the kids don't come down our street.
Well, that's interesting, because I had a friend who lives down the street from you, and she posted the same thing last night, that they had two people, and they were friends who stopped by with their little ones, but nobody from the neighborhood.
Yeah, no, I don't know if kids are doing more Halloween parties or things like that, or they're going to certain areas. I know there's certain areas in town where I hear that it's like, you have to have lots and lots because it's like thousands of, you know, children. But yeah, so no, didn't get a one. I had candy ready and ready to go. And I had Milky Ways. I had Starburst, you know, because that's the kind of thing I do since I'm an astronomy geek.
Yeah, of course.
But nothing given out. So I took it to the office to share with the staff.
Well, there you go. Did you get any down your way, Bruce? Probably not.
Never have down there. And in Eddington, like Sean said, the first couple of years we lived there, we get 6-8 kids. Then for 20 years, we didn't get anybody.
Wow.
And it was all the little kids on our street had grown up.
Right, right. Well, we had a pretty good turnout. It started early. I mean, we'd put out some bags of candy on the front porch, had 20 bags out there. When I got home after the show, they were gone. I had to replenish. But it was fun. Got a good turnout. And, you know, my son doesn't like a lot of things I do like peanut butter cups, Milky Ways. He doesn't like those, so I get all the things he doesn't want from his bags.
What does Abby get?
Abby gets the things that Graham doesn't like and I don't like, which is not much. We cover a pretty broad spectrum.
Candy corn and some mini.
Right. She actually gets the popcorn balls that were homemade and the Necco wafers. Pretty excited about all that. Well, that's not why. We didn't bring Sean all the way from Orono to talk about Halloween, although been nice to catch up on things here, but we want to talk about what's happening as we turn to the new month of November, and you got a brand new show starting this Friday.
Yeah, so we're kicking off Mars, The Ultimate Voyage. This program takes a look at what it would take to get humans to Mars, some of the dangers and challenges of long-term spaceflight travel, everything from radiation to sustainability to all those other things. Because, of course, going to Mars, you're looking at roughly a 3-year mission to go and return safely from the red planet. So it's a little bit different than going, you know, even to the moon, which is challenging enough. But sending humans to Mars will be a big thing. But it is something that we're hoping to do in the future. And NASA has, you know, planning with that for future Artemis missions beyond return to the moon. So we'll have to wait and see. But the show will dive into some of those topics and explore, you know, how we might get there.
Well, just being there, what's the longest anyone's been in space? I know we've crossed the 1-year mark, right?
Yeah, we've had a few astronauts who've been up, you know, like I want to say a year and 3 months, I think, or two and a half months is like the longest, I believe. I'd have to look it up, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, you know, and it is one of those things that, you know, going on a longer term voyage. And that's the other thing, too. Even when they are doing that, they're, you know, they're typically interacting with different and new crew members who are coming and changing over time, you know, and on a mission to Mars, that's, you know, you're going to be with probably 6 or 8 people who you have to really, really like.
Yeah.
Because, again, you're going to be stuck with them, you know, 24/7 and for 3 years, you know, so, yeah, 1,000 days or better. So a little bit different thing.
And make sure when you leave, don't leave Matt Damon behind, because the last time that didn't work out too well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, hopefully they'll bring him back, right?
That'd be great. Also coming up this weekend on the Sunday show, Legends of the Night Sky, Orion.
Yeah, this is a classic program that we bring back at this time of year. Tells the story of Orion the Hunter and how he ended up in the night sky and his love affair with Artemis and all of that. So it's a great program for families with young children. It's an animated special, and it's really great to show Orion and his companion constellations, and then we dive into them in the night sky, how to find them too, including, you know, Sirius, which Canis Major, and I have a pup named Sirius at home, so, you know, I always enjoy having a little astronomy stuff going on. And then we have Imagine Dragons is our music show this month. So that's that program we've done some updating with, added some new songs to, and should be a lot of fun for folks who like that. We also have a boom concert. The Baroque Orchestra of Maine is performing on Saturday, November 11th at 5 p.m. in the Planetarium. So if you're interested in classical music, that's a great time. Heidi Powell and some of her bandmates come out and do, again, live classical music in the dome under the stars.
That's
which is
so
always
cool.
A lot of fun.
Absolutely. I want to talk about what's going on up in the skies here in the month of November as well. What are a few of the highlights for people to keep their eyes open for?
Yeah, so Friday we have the, of course, the opposition of Jupiter, meaning it rises at sunset and sets at sunrise. And also this one's taking place near what we would call the closest approach for Jupiter. So Jupiter's going to be really great to see over the next month or so. It's already been good, but it's going to be even better to see and up from, you know, sunset to sunrise this month. And Jupiter, fourth brightest thing we see out in the sky right now, it basically is going to be rising in the eastern sky just a few minutes after sunset tonight. But again, by Saturday, it'll be rising right as the sun is setting and then staying up all through the night. Saturn is still in our sky in the south-southeast, and so that's a good view through a small telescope. Even 2 inches will show you the rings. And we've got Venus in the morning sky and Mars in the morning sky as well. Also this month, it is the Leonid meteor shower. That's a really great shower. Typically peaks around the 17th or 18th, but early morning, normally 2 or 3 in the morning when Leo is high overhead. That's from Comet Temple-Tuttle, the remains, and every 33 years it storms. So I remember in particular the storm back in 1999. It was really spectacular. Several thousand meteors an hour and just really incredible. This year, we're not on a storm year, but so you can probably expect 15 to 20 or so an hour. But every once in a while, it surprises us. So it is a meteor shower that if you're an early morning riser on one of those mornings, it's worth taking a peek for. Also Saturday, of course, we fall back as we go from daylight savings time back to standard time.
Boo!
Yeah, I know, all the fun with that, right? So, you know, but at least the mornings will hopefully be a little bit brighter, so you'll be getting up and still have a little bit of light in the morning, which we don't have now. So, but yeah, there's that whole daylight savings time bit happening as well this weekend. And I know a lot of folks don't like that. And then there was all this whole hubbub about keeping daylight savings time, which wouldn't have been a good idea.
No.
Really, Maine should be on Atlantic time.
Thank you.
You know, we're at the same longitude as, you know, Rio, and it has Atlantic time. We should be on Atlantic time. But I know it would need 4 states to join us, I guess. But that would be a better solution, really, for us in terms of our times. Because you can really tell at certain times of the year. This time of year, for instance, you can really tell that, you know, it would be helpful if we were in Atlantic time versus, you know, Eastern time zone.
Right. Boy, the moon the other night, we had that full moon. That was huge.
Yeah, we did have a really nice full moon a couple weekends ago on the 28th. And again, one of those really bright moons and spectacular to see. Actually, you know, we were talking about Halloween earlier. Halloween and of course, the Day of the Dead, which is today, these are considered cross-quarter days. They're basically a halfway point between the solstice and equinoxes. And for a lot of folks, of course, they had a variety of different significances. In particular, really, a lot of folks think of, you know, sort of the season of fall technically starting on this day, if you will. Even though we say it starts at the equinox, a lot of people will look to those cross quarter days because that's typically when it starts to feel more like what we expect that weather to be, whether it be a spring cross quarter day or a fall one. Typically that's when we look for them, or even the midsummer, you know, of course you have the midsummer cross quarter days as well. So, but this is one of those cross quarter days halfway between.
And here we are, boy, it seems like it's coming fast. We're only a little more than 5 months away from the solar eclipse.
Yeah, this is, of course, a big thing. Technically, there's a partial lunar eclipse this weekend, but with partial lunars, you really don't see much of a change. During a total lunar eclipse, it can get, you know, you get the moon sort of a deep reddish brown color. But yeah, April 8th of 2024, we have the total solar eclipse here in Maine. We've been gearing up. We just got in another batch of glasses because our first set was going kind of fast. So if you want solar eclipse glasses, get them while we have them. I tell folks, get them early just to make sure that you're good to go. We did have a nice little partial back in October. In fact, I was out at Stars Over Katahdin, and the weather just was good enough that we could get, you know, a bit of that partial in between some clouds. And thankfully, the evening of Stars Over Katahdin, we had really exceptionally beautiful skies, Milky Way overhead, and was really stunning.
I'm trying to remember, I was little at the time, but the last time, was it 63?
63, yeah,
what
in July.
What did we do? We built, I remember building contraptions in school to allow us to...
Yeah, the pinhole projectors, and folks can still do that too. So basically, this is not looking at the sun directly, but you normally stand with your back towards the sun, you have a pinhole, and you can project an image of the eclipse, and you can watch all the partial phases. Again, during totality, it is safe to look at the eclipse, and you want to, again, during totality, because, again, that's when you can see the corona, the atmosphere of the sun. It's the only time it's visible. But during all of the partial phases, you either need to use solar eclipse glasses, or you can do the projection method, or you can get, you know, solar filters if you're looking at it through a telescope. Make sure they're glass. That's really important. You can get Mylar ones for telescopes, but again, glass are much safer. Don't tend to get pinholes or other things or scratches on them as easy. So it's a better idea to do. And if you have old, old telescopes, some of the really old telescopes years ago used to have eyepiece filters. Never, ever use those. Those are never safe. They typically heat and crack, and then you have serious issues. The sun is no more powerful on a day of an eclipse. It's just that we want to look at it to see what's going on. And if you stare at the sun anytime, you'll burn your eyes, of course, because you don't feel, you don't have pain receptors on your retina and that. So that's why it's really important to use that you know, to view it safely and be careful when you're doing it.
I see guys saying they can use welding masks. Is
number 14 or higher.
Number four. Okay, number it is true. Okay,
yeah, number 14 or higher, because that's basically, you know, the same level as a solar eclipse. But yeah, 14 or higher if you want to use welder's glasses.
Nice. Well, we'll talk a lot more about it as we get closer, but check out all the great things going on up at the Versant Power Astronomy Center, the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. You can go to astro.umaine.edu for more information. Sean, good to see you as always.
Great to see you.
We'll catch you late November, early December.
That sounds like a plan.
Looking forward to it. It is 14 minutes after the hour here on a Wednesday afternoon.